Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
BashaniRadio.com is global. You can listen on any computer or mobile device that connects to the internet. Simply go to BashaniRadio.com and click on the show you would like to hear. Then sit back and enjoy yourself with powerful and positive talk radio. BashaniRadio.com, New York City. Always talking about everything.
It's the 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival. Over 20 superstar artists on one stage. This is your 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival lineup. Presented by our marquee partner, Capital One. Coldplay. The Weeknd. DJ Khaled. Chris Stapleton. Lord, Kings of Leon, Big Sean, Pink, Miley Cyrus, 30 Seconds to Mars, Niall Horan, David Guetta, Thomas Rhett, Harry Styles, and special guest, Kesha. Our 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival. It's September 22nd and 23rd at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm your host, the one and only Vincent T. Edwards, better known as Mr. Speaker. Please take a moment to check me out on the internet at www.vincenttedwards.com. That's vincenttedwards.com. Got a great show lined up for you today. If you're interested in being a coach working in athletics, you need to hear this show. My guest today, live in the studio, is Coach Todd Middleton, and he is the defensive ends coach at Florida A&M University, the university that sits on the highest of seven hills in Tallahassee, Florida, and he's my guest. Welcome, Coach Middleton.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here in the studio. Once again, you're listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks, the show that's all about inspiring you to reach your potential. Coach Todd, what's it like being a football coach?
It's very rewarding at times. It can be very rewarding. It can be frustrating. The thing that I take from being a coach is the late Chuck Noll used to say, is that you can't get too high with the highs and you can't get too low with the lows. So you just have to be on an even keel. But it's very rewarding. You can see people change their lives. Come from a situation where there's little to no hope to receiving an education and really changing their lives. And that's what it's about, you know, inspiring young men to achieve greatness, to reach goals and to and to do things positive in the community.
Give my listening audience just a little taste of your background. Where did you grow up? Where were you born? Where did you go to school?
I grew up in Lake Worth, Florida, which is a suburb of West Palm Beach.
Oh, you die now with rich folk.
Well, I was across the track, so. I grew up in South Florida, Lake Worth, about an hour north of Miami. Working class family, two parents. My mom worked in the community. She worked at a nursing home, local nursing home. My dad worked for the city of Lake Worth, and then he worked at the restaurant, Christine's Restaurant, which I think is still open in Lake Worth at night. One of two kids. I had one older sister, and I had a nephew that was raised as a brother. Attended Lake Worth High School. Throughout my 4 years, after high school, I knew I wanted to go to college, but there was a challenge. I had to go the long route.
The long route.
So I had to. I attended a prep school, which was very unique. Wasn't really heard of in the black community at that time. but at the time, my head coach at the prep school. His dad was our athletic director. He had played running back at Florida State and got a chance to be a head coach at a prep school in Tennessee, in Sweetwater, Tennessee. So he was coming back to the state of Florida, and he was looking for players to play at the prep school called Tennessee Military Institute in Sweetwater, Tennessee. And this was the opportunity for me. This was the door for me to get out and pursue my dreams of getting an education and playing college football. Unfortunately, I was not a serious student at the time. So because of that, I had to take the long route.
I got there.
I remember getting on the Greyhound bus going to Sweetwater, Tennessee. It was a great experience for me. We played what you call a JV schedule. You would play the younger guys at the major four-year institutions. Some people have heard of the various prep schools now, like Fork Eugene Academy, which is in Virginia, which is a high prestigious prep school on the East Coast. Some people have heard of Wyoming Seminary, but Tennessee Military Institute was unique in the fact that it played SEC schools. We played their JVs. So we played University of Georgia. We played Auburn. We played Tennessee. We played University of Kentucky.
Oh, big time.
So you're playing the legitimate guys. So, we would play them on a Friday. They would have varsity games on Saturday, or we play Sunday. So there was opportunities where if a guy didn't play a whole lot on Saturday, he would line up versus us on Sunday. So I remember being at Auburn University. We went there, we played on a Sunday, but the Saturday we got a chance to witness their homecoming game. And we had a young man, I never forget, Bruce Campbell. He was from Alabama, and his dream was to play at University of Alabama. But he knew a lot of people in the state, and he was like, I got a friend of mine I want you to meet before we play Auburn. I grew up and I played against him. So he said, you got to be a little cautious because, he speaks a little slow, but he's a really talented guy. So got a chance to meet Bo Jackson. Oh. So got a chance to sit down and talk with him a little bit. Bo knows. So got a chance to watch him play that Saturday. It was just incredible. That was in the height of his career. Obviously a Heisman Trophy winner, but to have that experience, that was a tremendous experience down there at TMI. Like I said, we played, Tennessee and other SEC schools. I remember playing University of Georgia. The young man that played quarterback against us, some things happened later on that season, and he ended up being the starting quarterback at Georgia.
Wow.
Ended up starting for them in the Citrus Bowl and led them to a victory. Right. So that was my prep school.
So where'd experience. You go from there?
From prep school, I thought I was going to get recruited by the major universities, but there's something called academics, so I still had to have the achieving score. So
that's an underlying theme, and that's something that I really, for the listening audience that's out there, and that athlete that's listening, they may be talented, but it goes back to that whole concept of academics.
That's right. The concept of student-athlete, and you have to have a qualifying score in order to achieve eligibility. And now it's more strict, more defined. It wasn't wasn't that much when I was in high school, but now you have to have a qualifying test score with qualifying academics, meaning that you have to have 16 core classes with a 2.5 GPA. Now, they have what they call a sliding scale, where the higher your GPA, the lower qualifying test score you should have. But that's still mandatory requirement you have to be considered for scholarship.
And if for me, you know, I always look at the words and I always say, you know, you got to be a student athlete. But the academics is first and foremost. So I always thought they should say, you know, you need to be an athletic student because you got the adjective there describing, you know, I'm a student, but I'm athletic, you know, at the same. So I think in my mind, because of the weight that's put on it, I think they, you know, should reverse it rather than student athlete. I think athletic student. That's just me. I'm just Mr. Speaker.
I can understand that, but I think when it comes to 80,000 on Saturday, they're not interested in seeing student athletes.
All right, they want to see some hard hitting.
Yes, yes.
And so, moving on from that, from that experience in Tennessee, what happened next?
From that opportunity, I knew I had to attend various junior colleges. So I started looking at the junior college route because I was what you consider a non-qualified, meaning I had not achieved the qualifying test score out of high school. Once I got into junior college, the prep school, I was not taking any more high school classes because I had graduated. So the next day I had to attain an associate degree, which was a 2-year degree, in order to go on to a 4-year university. So from that, I got a chance. I've got a scholarship out at Dodge City Community College in Dodge City, Kansas.
Dodge City. Gunslinger. Yes.
I remember the first time I...
Okay, correct.
Yes. Yes. I remember the first time I told her, I said, I got a chance to go to Dodge City. My parents were like, Kansas, where's that? You know, no one knew where Kansas was located. You know, and you hear about the legendary Dodge City. You know, there are people like, Dodge City? Like the real show? Is that a real town? So... Yeah, but I had a chance to go out to Dodge City Community College. So I went out there, started in the summer of 1986.
But all the way out in Kansas. But while you was out there, did you meet somebody that forever changed your life out there in Kansas?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. There was a young lady out there that I met who later became my wife. We ended up dating long distance. Unfortunately, my stay at Dodge City was not very long. It was from that summer through the fall, and I ended up transferring. I had an injury that occurred that was a pre-existing injury that bothered me in camp, so I wasn't able to really perform like I could have. So because of that, there was a limited amount of restrictions of out-of-state players that you could have at the Kansas Junior College level at that time. Now, that's since changed this year. It's been a tremendous change out there in the Kansas Jayhawk League, where now there's no limitation on the amount of out-of-state players that you could have. But at that time, you could only have 10 out-of-state players. So with that, I got an injury, so I knew that I would have to find another institution to attend.
And where'd you ultimately end up?
Well, from there, I ended up at an institution called Lees-McRae College, which is in Banner Elk, North Carolina. So you're talking about 30 minutes from Appalachian State, and I got an interesting story about that. Upon transferring from Dodge City to Lees-McRae, there was a young man that was a teammate of mine that was attending Lees-McRae, and he was supposed to pick me up at the train station in Salisbury, North Carolina. So I'm thinking everything is fine, and I arrive in the Salisbury, North Carolina, probably about 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. So the train station is probably about the size of this room, maybe a little bit bigger. So I'm waiting. I have all my bags on with me, and I don't see my ride. And I'm like, wow, there's something wrong. So I'm calling the school. I'm calling him. There's no answer. So I call home. I talk to my mom. And that's the thing I'll never forget. And I think this wisdom from my mom changed my life at the time. I wanted to come home at that time. I said, Mom, you know, my ride's not here. I don't think it's right. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to come home. I'm just going to get a bus. I'm just going to come home. And she told me, in her wisdom, she knew that I needed education. And she said, no, you need to stay there and find out what the deal is in the morning. You find yourself a place to stay tonight, but you need to stay and find out what the deal is so you can get an education. So I ended up making contact with somebody that morning. That night, I spent the night in the Salisbury police station. So on the couch in the lobby, you know, all my things sitting there, police officers coming in and out, looking at me on the couch, laying down. But they just go about their business. And I didn't have anywhere else to go. They was like, well, you know, that's fine. You can stay here tonight. So I finally got a hold of the coach at the time, and he said there was a huge snowstorm because Lees McRae is up in the mountains in North Carolina. So he said there's a huge snowstorm, and he said that you take the money for your deposit with school and get yourself a hotel. There's only one bus, and you make sure you're on that bus that next morning. And I was on that next bus.
So you are a true example of what it means to overcome challenges in order to succeed. In all of those experiences, what kept you going? What kept you motivated in order to achieve?
Well, I know I wanted to play college football, and I always prayed about it and said, Lord, if you just make a way, and God always made a way. It was always I always went the unique route. I went the different route. It wasn't conventional. But he's always made a way in my life, and my mom, and, you know, growing up, you know, going to church and, you know, serving the Lord and having a mind and praying and saying, hey, you know, God, please make a way. And I will say that he's always made a way.
So ultimately, what prompted you to go into coaching?
Well, once I graduated, I ended up finishing up at Lees McRae and graduating at Wake Forest University. I had been around athletics. I had been around athletics my whole life. I was back in Palm Beach County. I had a job. I was working for the juvenile delinquent program. We were basically minimum security prison. And I wanted a job that was more into my personality, something than that. Even though I knew it was work, it was demanding, but I didn't see it that way. You know, I felt that it's something that you could wake up in the morning and do it without even thinking twice about it. So I made up my mind that I wanted to be a coach. So I started applying. I knew the first way to get it, except in being a coach, you had to be what you call a graduate assistant, which was an apprentice type position where you learn the position, the profession from the ground up. So I started applying all around the country. I mean, from coast to coast, I'm talking, you know, Tennessee, UCLA, all the major programs. I sent letters, and I've received letters from every one of them. They were all rejection letters.
I call that fan mail. But kind of like when you're applying for a job and you don't hear back from them, and they get that little letter, I'm sorry, we've selected a candidate that best fits, better fits our needs. It's like, okay, really?
And I never forget, so I called my alma mater at Wake Forest University, and I talked to the football operations director who just retired. His name was Bill Faircloth. So he told me in a nice soft voice, he said, well, Todd, a lot of guys start off at Chowan College. You might want to give the coach a call there. A lot of guys getting the culture through Chowan Junior College. And that was for me with Chowan College because we had played them when I was at Lees McRae. And sure enough, coach said, yeah, we have an opening here. We like to meet with you. Come on up. Drive on up to Murfreesboro, North Carolina, and interview. We'll get a chance to sit down and talk with you. So I got a chance to go up there. I never forget, the head coach at the time was Jim Garrison. He was like, you know, I like you, man. You're very intelligent. You're bright. You're articulate. You know, I'm going to hire you. Come on up here and join us in coaching. So at the time, I spoke to my girlfriend at the time. I told her, I said, if I get this job, honey, I'll marry you. So I got the job, and I made the call. The next thing you know, we were married. So we were married, me and my wife, and our wedding gifts and our two cars, and we were headed to Murfreesboro, North Carolina.
And what's her name?
Her name is Carol Middleton.
All right. Got to give her a little shout out. Got to give her a little shout out. Can't leave her nameless.
Yeah, and it was quite an experience there in Murfreesboro. I'll never forget, we pulled into town probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the town was very small. It had a little small blanket light, and that was about it. And we found a hotel for the night and got settled in, and it was quite a challenge to find a place to stay there. But things work out. There was some calls made. So I started my coaching career at Chowan College in Murfreesboro, North Carolina.
What was and looking back in all your years and of experience as a coach, what could you say was the most challenging aspect of becoming a coach and now being a coach?
Well, the challenging aspect is the waiting stage. It's the being patient until that opportunity comes to get in the door. And with coaching, you're not going to get paid that much at first. My first coaching job, I made $500 a month before takeout. So,
wow.
You know, you're talking about $5,000 on a 10-month contract. So that's the big thing. That's the challenge. No one wants to make that commitment. So I didn't make much money my first few years of coaching.
But you kept at it.
Kept at it. There were other opportunities that came along. I had the opportunity to move on from Chowan College to West Virginia Wesleyan College. You know, the pay was better. It was a very good situation. But I always aspired to move a little bit better. And then my ultimate goal was to coach Division I football. And at the time, with being a Division I coach, one of the basic requirements was to become a graduate assistant at the Division I level. So after my second year of coaching, there was a relative, my wife, her cousin was married to the offensive line coach at the University of Arizona at the time. And they were a hot program. You're talking, you know, Desert Swarm. You're talking Teddy Bruschi. Nope. One of the premier programs in the country. So there were some conversations made. We got to know one another. And then there was an opening at the University of Arizona. So I remember flying from Charleston, West Virginia, to Tucson, Arizona. And you're talking about a change in environment. You get off the plane in Tucson, there's palm trees, it's hot. It was just an incredible whirlwind. But there was a little waiting process, but I got the call. And next thing you know, I was a graduate assistant at the University of Arizona.
Wow. So you felt good.
Very good. Very good. Very good. And there was another surprise. My wife, she happened to be 4 months pregnant with our first child. So that was a tremendous challenge, too. So you're a graduate assistant. You don't make much money. And your wife is pregnant. So you're trying to make ends meet. So that was quite a challenge. But I will say the good Lord made a way for us.
Made a way. You're listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm your guest. My guest is Todd Middleton. I'm your host, the one and only Vincent T. Edwards, on the web at www.vincentedwards.com. And we're here talking about the whole concept of coaching and being a coach and what it means to inspire those young men on the gridiron. What is the coaching life like for your family?
It can be very transient at times. There were a time in coaching with various staffs like Penn State and University of Missouri where there were certain individuals could stay on that staff or stay in that situation for 10 and 15 plus years. But that's not the way the coaching staff, the coaching profession is gone. It's very transient at times. You can stay anywhere from less than a year. And if you're lucky, I would say, you know, 4 to 6 years is probably the average. Seems like
it's all about winning, you know. No matter to me, from the outside looking in, it seems to be, you know, I'm not asking you to agree or disagree with this, but it seems to be a business. And it's the business of winning, and winning at, you know, I would just say all costs. Because you see, you know, you could have a decent season, but if you're not in that top tier, they do the coaching carousel at the end of the year.
Definitely. The first Monday after the season, that's what a lot of coaches call Black Monday. And that's where you would find out if you had a job or if the staff had a job. And things could change. Things could shake up right away. But the bottom line is winning. The thing is, the big thing is being productive. You have to win. And that's what people want to see. College athletics is a multi-billion-dollar business. And people want to see winners at all levels. At all levels.
And coaching somewhat reminds me of being a teacher in the educational system. And we hear a lot about teachers being graded in schools, getting graded based upon the performance of their students. You can be a great teacher, but a lot of it comes down to if the student themselves are willing. How do you, as a coach, inspire this young man to go into battle, risk his body to perform and to perform at a level that will keep you employed?
Well, it's a daily challenge. It's a daily challenge. You have to maintain consistent communication, and you have to continue to reinforce goals that you need to achieve daily, monthly, weekly, in order to achieve your big goal, which is being successful on the field. First thing first is that you have to take care of things academically. So as a coach, even though some major universities, most have academic staffs set up to monitor student athletes in order to be successful, in order to make it on the field. But you as a coach, you're still ultimately responsible for that. So there's a monitoring process academically, athletically. There's year-round training. Football now is a year-round training profession, so to speak. Used to be when I played, guys would probably train 4 or 5 months out of the year, get ready in the summer, and then just go play. Now it's year rounds, and that's how people train. And most teams, most individuals stay at the university year round. You might have a little break for Christmas and spring break, briefly in the summer, but you're back and you're training. But ultimately, you know, you have to maintain your goals, reaching those goals, striving for those goals, setting those goals. And on Saturday, it's just like a play. You prepare, you've practiced, now it's time to go out and execute.
What do you like best about being a coach?
I like the opportunity to interact with the young men. I like the opportunity to have a positive influence on their lives day to day, to see how they grow, how they come in as young men, young boys, so to speak. But as we say at Florida A&M, there's a program called Boys to Men. They come in, they're immature, they don't see the big picture. But as you continue to have focus and show them the goals and things they achieve, how they go from selfish goals, selfish motivation, to being more concerned about the team, and how you can go from a boy to a man, and understanding and the maturity once that person walks out that door, how he's achieved things on the field, but ultimately leads to success in life.
Is there one story you can share over your coaching career of an athlete, not mentioning any names, that you saw that came in that you kind of had some doubts about, but after you got with him and mentor, they actually changed and went through some things, but reach their potential? Any story that just stands out?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a young man, and I could mention his name because he's no longer playing college football, but he, last check, I think he was living in Florida doing the insurance. There was a young man, I'll never forget it, named Barry Cryer. I was at Dodge City Community College as a coach, and I never forget one of our coaches said, there's a young man that's going to be coming in. I'm not sure, but his name is Barry Cryer. He's transferring from Northeast Mississippi Junior College in Boonville, Mississippi, where he was let go on a team. And I remember going to the airport, and I see this big guy there, and I said, "What's your name?" He said, "Barry Cryer." I said, "Oh yeah, we knew you were coming. We just didn't know when." But Barry came out to Dodge City Community College. He had had a bad experience in Mississippi. Basically, he was kicked off the team. But I knew something about Barry right away. But Barry was a hard worker, and we really bonded right away. He would do everything I would ask. He would push himself. He would do things academically, what he was supposed to do. And he was just a pleasant person to be around. He loved to play the game. But Barry continued to work throughout the season, and he kept getting better and better. And at the end of the year, which was an incredible story, Barry Cryer went from being a unrecruited college football reject to signing at the University of Nebraska.
Wow.
So not only did he just sign at the University of Nebraska, he ended up playing at the University of Nebraska, graduated from the University of Nebraska in 1 year. And that's what coach was all about. That's one of the most rewarding stories I can always tell throughout my life.
Life itself is all about relationships and maintaining those relationships and helping to inspire others. You know, no greater, chance to inspire or to motivate is that in your home, your own household, those who interact with you at all times. If I were to ask your family, your kids, I'm gonna start with the kids. Any one of your children, and you can talk about them all. To describe you in three words, what would those three words be?
I think the first one would be that funny. I always keep a sense of humor in the home. I would say committed. Committed to being the proper father, the proper husband, the proper dad. And the third one would be spiritually minded. I think that's the focus of our home. I think we have our spiritual foundation. You know, we attend church, we pray as a family, and we know that God has led us, even coming here to Florida A&M University, because of you know, despite being a coach, I understand I also have a ministry to be young men and to lead them to the Lord, because you know, they want to know, hey, coach, how did you do it? And ultimately, you point to God. Wow. But those would be the three words I would say to describe me.
Funny, committed, and spiritually minded. All right. Now we're gonna go to the queen of the house. if I were to ask the queen of the house to describe you in three words, how would Miss Middleton describe you?
I would.
No pressure.
No. I think she would say that I'm loyal, dedicated to our relationship, and a loving husband. I think the big thing with us and our relationship is that I always want to empower my wife. I want her to know that she's loved, she's talented in her own right, and she can achieve whatever she can achieve. And I think that, you know, my role as a man is to let her see that, to encourage her to go out and pursue her goals and dreams and aspirations. But I think those three words would describe, I think she would say that about me.
Dedicated to the relationship, loyal, and a loving husband. You're listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm your host, the one and only Vincent T. Edwards. My guest today is Coach Todd Middleton, and we're talking about the ins and the outs of coaching right here on Mr. Speaker Speaks. What's it like being a coach and having athletes in the house? Do you ever find the need to coach in addition to their coaches and what they tell them? I know you have two young men that played on the gridiron.
Well, yeah.
And I know it's something about you. You know, and did you ever coach him? Because it's something about being the coaches.
Definitely. There's something about it. There are things that, because you grew up in a home where your father was a coach, you saw the wins and losses. You saw the situations that he went through. There's a level of understanding that you already have as a son of a coach, where most young men than City Athletics. They don't have the understanding. A great example of that, even though he wasn't a coach, but he was a professional athlete, was Peyton Manning and his brothers. And you see the Manning Show and how those guys came up in that household and how there was such a early level of understanding of the game. You know, they were talking coverages and things like that while these guys were young, and the younger kids that were in the area that came into their homes, they had no idea what they were talking about. But, you know, the Mannings had a early keen understanding. And that's how it is with my kids. You know, they understand what it's like to be a coach's son and understand discipline and understand, listen to what the coaches say where you don't have that level of, confusion, that level of, disobedience. So a coach's son or a coach's, you know, a person growing up in a home of a coach, they have a level of understanding that's more advanced than your regular student athlete. Yeah.
Who inspired you the most growing up? We all have our challenges and we have our dreams, and sometimes things don't go according to plan. Who was that person or those people in your life that said, no matter what, coach, you can do this? Who inspired you?
Well, I was very fortunate. I had a very strong family net of supporters. You know, both parents, my mom and my dad, they supported me whatever I wanted to do. If I had to pick out one particular individual, it would be my mom. Because I was a dreamer.
If it was TV, you could just go, "Hey, my mom," you know. They always, yes. But we on radio. Oh, yeah.
Yes, she knew I was a dreamer, and the things I would say was not really common in the community at that time. But I said, "Hey, I wanted to be a college football player. I wanted to get an education, which was common, but to go out and achieve that, you know, she was willing to do whatever it took to help me achieve that. And she's always supported me. You know, she was like, hey, if that's what you want to do, if that means getting out of your comfort zone, if that means leaving home, if that means doing things that's not normal, I will support you. And I'll always support you. So my mom was always supportive. But my dad was supportive too, but he didn't understand it to the degree that she did. Yeah. I had great support from my grandmother while she was alive. I had my godmother, my godfather, that I spent a lot of time with, but I had a supportive staff, but my mom was the one that said, "Hey son, if you want to go out and you want to do this, let's make it happen. I'll do what it can, whatever I can to support you." And she was always there. She was always there. But the thing about it is that she always gave me the support that most parents need, that most kids need to hear these days. It wasn't like she would say, "Hey son, the coach is wrong. You need to come home. It's okay, baby. Don't worry about that type of stuff." No, she was always saying that, "Hey, you need to go out. You need to get an understanding of what it takes to get it done. And you need to pursue that. And you need to speak clearly and make that message clear to everyone is what you're trying to achieve." So she always told me to go out and get an understanding and ask for help and be open about it. But don't be afraid to dream. Go out. Go do it. I was very blessed, and she inspired me a lot.
When you look at coaching, you know, you don't like everything about every job. You know, I do some things, you know, I do speaking and teaching, and I could talk all day. I hate writing, but sometimes I have to write my thoughts down, do the research. If I could just contract that portion out of my job, I would do it, because I totally detest it. When you look at coaching, what is the thing that you like least about the coaching profession?
Well, the big thing is that your family suffer. There's a great time commitment that's needed in order to be a coach. And the ones that suffer most because you're spending time with student athletes is your family. So there's a lot of time that you're away from your family. You're not at every birthday party. You're not at every celebration that goes on. You're not free every weekend. You know, there's things that you'll miss out that most conventional homes, they don't miss out. So it's the time that's lost that you can't replace. Mm. That's the biggest commitment, I think, that coaching brings with it.
That thing. For my listening audience, those individuals that are considering becoming a coach, give us a quick overview. You know, we're getting ready. I mean, it's summertime. And for me, I love football. Never played. I love it. And right now it's just a dry season. But I know, you know, the pro level, the mini camps, OTAs, all that stuff's getting ready to start. And I, you know, so I was like, okay, I start watching the reruns on the NFL Network. I get geared up. But give us a day in the life of a coach, because we hear these things, man, they're there all day long. They never go home. They never sleep, and they're always football, football, football. Give us a typical day in the life of a coach.
Well, you know, the calendar, there's different phases of coaching. You know, that's one thing what our head coach says, that there's different phases. So during different parts of the year, you're in different phases of the season. So right now we're in the summer phase where, you know, there's some training and things going on in the morning with the players. But a typical day during the season, once the season starts, we're in. You know, we usually get in the office probably about 7 o'clock. There's usually a meeting for about an hour, hour and a half to go over what the plan is for that day. And after that meeting, we usually break up according to what side of the ball you're on, offense or defense. So with that, there's some film studying that goes on, and you start laying the foundation for the strategies of the upcoming game. And that'll last around lunchtime. You usually get about an hour for lunch. You go and try to get a workout and grab something to eat. And then you'll come back and you might look at a little bit more practice or a little bit more film. Then you start getting ready for practice. The players can start coming around 1:30. Then we'll have what you call special teams meeting. And then they'll start looking at the film and talk about the different strategies we're going to use during that phase of the game. So you go straight in from a special teams meeting to a position meeting. So we have an offensive and defensive meeting after that. That'll usually last 30 to 45 minutes. And then it's time, guys, during that time, even when they walk through the door at 1:30, they're getting taped and they're getting ready for practice. So as we're speaking and they're having those meetings, guys are rotating, getting taped, ready for practice. So we're out on the practice field about 2:45 or 3 o'clock, a little bit after 3. And that'll go to about 5:30. And then we're off the field. Sometimes guys have to leave a little earlier for class, but we'll go to about 5:30, 6 o'clock. We'll take a break. We'll have a little dinner, and then we'll come back and we'll look at that practice. So we want to make those corrections right there. So on a good night, you know, you can leave around 9 o'clock, 9:30.
Good.
If you're struggling, if things aren't going right, if there are a lot of mistakes being made, you could be walking out of there at 11 o'clock, maybe 11:30.
Honey, just put the meal on the back of the burner. I'll be there later on.
That's right.
Got to keep the job. We got some things we have to work on. Well, Coach, it's truly been great. You're listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm your host, Vincent T. Edwards. My guest is Coach Todd Middleton. He is the defensive end coach here at Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida. Go Rattlers. Coach, you expecting great things this year?
I'm expecting great things.
Right. What would you, I'm going to give you the last word. For that person that's wanting to be a coach, what would you say to them?
Go for it. Go for it. But understand there's going to be a level of commitment. There's going to be a level of commitment as far as sacrificing your time. But it can be very, very rewarding. It's one of the best professions to be in. There's nothing like being called coach, because some parents, some individuals, you might be the only parent they ever know is the coach, but you're inspiring them to go out and achieve greatness. And at the end of the day, a lot of young men come and go, but they never forget their coach.
Their coach. What would you say to that athlete that's listening now, relative to being a good athlete and becoming what I always heard, they're great at what they do. They have skills, but they're not coachable.
Well, that's the thing about it, is that in order to achieve anything, goals in life, is that you're going to have to change within. You're going to have to realize that even though your skill is going to take you to a certain level, but you never know everything there is to know. And that's where you have to rely on individuals that can help you achieve those goals and dreams. And a lot of times, most of the times, that's your coaches. So in order to achieve those things, is that it's going to take a opportunity where you need to look in the mirror and realize, if I want to achieve my goals and dreams, what I have for my life and my family and my friends or my parents, whatever goals you have, it's going to take a realistic look in the mirror where you have to sit down and say, hey, I'm going to have to do what it takes. And if that means changing, stop being more concerned about myself, but being concerned about everyone else, that's how a success is achieved.
Now, so what I'm hearing there is, you know, you got to be willing, in order to grow, you got to be willing to listen, only listen, but apply those things, because you don't know it all.
That's right.
Everybody needs some help. Well, Coach, I tell you, I could go on and on, but we've been here for a while. It's truly been a pleasure. You know, I love football, and I never was able to play. I was in the band. I got to travel everywhere the football team went, but I truly love the game, and it's great having you here, becoming a great friend, and I just thank God for you. We'd love to have you back.
Yes, love to be back.
During the season, at the end of the season, whenever you want to come back. And when you write that book, I'd like for it to air first right here on Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm going to speak those things which are not as though they were. Truly great. Well, you've been listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks on the web at www.vincenttedwards.com. Please go out there, take a look, listen to some excerpts from the CD, Acquiring Your Dreams. But remember, in all that you do, be magnificent. Until next time, be good, be blessed, but most of all, be a blessing to someone.
Thank you for listening to another great episode of BashaniRadio.com. Make sure to like Bashani Radio on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. All of our social media connections are located on BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything.